This is Ashley Hodge with the Sikkim 365 podcast, and I'm previewing Gonzaga Baylor with Jason King. We've been embedded in Indianapolis for 8 days, 7 days. I mean, it's been a while. Seems like our second home by now.
I'm feeling it as I look into this mirror here, and whatever this is, this screen. I mean, I think the four trips to the Eagle and three to Babbo's Pizza and a beer or 17 starting to catch up with me, man. I'm gonna have to get back in the gym after this, but it's been fun. I mean, I've always thought Indy was a little overrated for tournament city, but I take that opinion back now. I've had a great time here. Yeah. Obviously there was more people, but there's still been enough to make it a really good time, and a lot of good Baylor fans up here support their team.
And we got to talk about that meal we had the other night just for a second. Tony's, oh my gosh. I'm still thinking about that.
About every hour since then, I've just had a moment where I've just sat back and paused and appreciated what a great meal that was. I keep thinking about it. We went to Tony's Steakhouse, which I'd never heard of.
Right.
Here in Indianapolis. Apparently there's a couple of them. I don't know what cities they're in, but it was one of the best steakhouse meals I've had. And I've been to most of the big Vegas steakhouses. I like to do that when I go to Vegas and other cities. But man, this ranked right up there. Everything from the hostess that sat us to the waiters and the waitresses to the bread they brought out before the meal to the crab cake to the shrimp cocktail to the wedge salad to the steak. I mean, it was just phenomenal. And, you know, I even thought about going back around 5 o'clock today before the game, but I think that would put me to sleep.
I hear you. Well, and you know, you and I are with Donald and Wade for that one. And then last night I went to the Livery with David Smoke and Drake and that same crew. That was a good meal too. So we've eaten some good food. And then of course
I don't understand what you were eating there. You sent me the menu and it looked a little odd to me, but you said it was tremendous.
I got the guacamole. It was Latin American food. I got the guacamole. I got the skirt steak, and the dessert was like a flan and was a graham cracker ice cream. Oh man, it was good. That dessert was unbelievable, and the drinks. I mean, it was a nice vibe. Really cool place. But I'm sure most people tune in to don't want to hear our food opinions. They want to hear about Gonzaga Baylor. This is the matchup we've been waiting for. You and I were in the lobby of the JW Marriott in December and so excited for that matchup. And then it got canceled at the last minute. And that was kind of a depressing day. We watched Baylor football lose that night, you know, so it was just an all around bummer. But here we are, you know, 3 months later, 4 months later, and we're going to see that matchup in person. And I mean, what an incredible storyline for these two programs. You know, just the 2 year run that these two programs have had is incredible. You know, for Baylor fans, it's kind of nostalgic because we hope that we win the game, but it's kind of sad to see this, you know, nucleus play their last games in a Baylor uniform. And so I just hope, you know, the fans appreciate all that this team has meant to us over the years, and we've covered them closely. We followed the ride from beginning to end, both seasons. What are some of your thoughts as we enter into this matchup tonight, Jason?
You're right. I mean, I'm kind of sad about it in a way. I mean, everyone should be happy, and I am happy that they're playing in the championship. But I probably should just savor this moment before looking too far ahead. But meaning all these guys being gone, because I do hate that this is the last time we're going to see Davion and Vital and probably Butler and Teague and the nucleus. And it's just been such a great 2 years. And you know, I saw Freddie and Devontae Bandu last night as well. And I mean, I've said it before, just from a media standpoint, you know, having done this for 20 years, I can't remember ever covering a team that had this many or that just had a locker room full of this many great people character wise that were all on the same page that represented the school the right way. There's not one bad seed, bad apple in that locker room all the way up to the coaches. And I think that's the reason why, you know, along with a lot of talent, that they're having so much success, but just a joy they like to use the culture of joy, Jesus, others, yourself. I just thought about joy in general, joy to cover. I mean, like joy to be around. I mean, such a great spirit. There's a picture of Vital yesterday from the game the other night. You know, he had one of the worst games of his season, 2 points, 1 rebound, foul trouble, which has kind of plagued him in the whole tournament. You know, you would think that after a fourth or fifth straight game of that, he would be frustrated, maybe some bad body language. But there's this picture of him hugging Mark Patterson after the game. And I mean, it just radiates energy and happiness and joy. And that, to me, that's what really encapsulates him and encapsulates this team, is he doesn't care that he scored 2 points. I mean, he's happy for his teammate, Mark Patterson, getting that basket. He's happy they're moving on. It's not about him. Yeah. And maybe 4 years ago, he wouldn't have been that way. But it just shows how this, the culture of this program, can change someone. And it's really all just kind of crescendoing at just the right time.
Yeah, you know, it's I've been able to spend some time with some of the parents and families while we've been in Indianapolis for so long. You know, the Mitchells, the Butlers, the Teagues, and just great people. And, you know, certainly Zach Loveday met his parents for the first time and talked to his dad on the phone for a long time during the recruitment. But they just talked about how thrilled they were that Zach was at Baylor, you know, and how he's improving and getting better every day. So, I mean, it's just such a great culture. It's a joy to watch. It's a joy to cover. We'll probably do a podcast after the season, you know, just a trip down memory lane. But for tonight, what do you think some of the keys are to this matchup? You know, Gonzaga is obviously a historically great offensive team. It looks like Baylor is playing back to the level where, you know, arguably the best defense in the country. I think Coach K on a serious podcast that in 47 years of coaching, he'd never seen defense like Baylor played against Villanova in the second half. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an incredible statement from a Hall of Fame coach, maybe the best ever, you know, to coach the game.
There's been a lot of bulletin board quotes that Baylor can really use in recruiting, I think, you know, from some of these supposed coaches. Mark Few said yesterday that Baylor was a legit powerhouse in college basketball now. And even though we know it here as Baylor fans, you know, to have him say that and have the whole country hear it, you know, is pretty cool. So, you know, when I look at this Gonzaga team, the thing that scares me the most, just because of the matchup and the personnel, is just Timmy down low, you know, just operating and kind of having his way in the paint. I just think that's going to be really tough for Baylor to stop. I think they've got to find, as you said earlier, I won't take credit, just find a way to make him uncomfortable, you know, find a way to try to keep him from catching the ball. Or there was so many times when he just would catch that ball one-on-one against UCLA, and it just looked so easy, you know, it's just all automatic. So, you know, maybe he's going to get his, you know, I mean, someone's going to, you know, score 20 plus for them, and maybe probably that's him. But I think that's one of the big keys. Well, what are some of the things you're looking at?
No, I think that's the big key for me is making it work extremely hard on defense. Mm-hmm. Watching that UCLA game, Jaime Jaquez, I think that's how you pronounce his name. Mm-hmm. Number 4 for UCLA, was able to take Timmy and Kispert off the dribble and create some problems, make them work harder. You know, some of Timmy's foul trouble came, you know, from helping, you know, in those situations. So I think if Matt Meyer may be a real key to be, you know, he's a similar skill set, a better player than Jaime, in my opinion. So if he's able to, you know, take those guys off the dribble and create some mismatches and get to the foul line, dump off to John, you know, John gets, you know, I think 6 or more free throws for John would be a key also. You know, if we can get the guys in foul trouble and, you know, get them thinking and, you know, playing a physical game, it's to our advantage because they don't have much depth behind him. They bring in Antoine Watson, but he's a guy, you know, it's funny, like Mark Vidal, his numbers efficiency wise go up in these, the better the competition, the better Mark Vidal's efficiency numbers. Antoine Watson's a guy that's seen a big drop off in efficiency numbers against top competition.
Well, with Vidal, you know, I feel for him because, I mean, he's been here 5 years, and I just feel like this has not been a good tournament for him because of foul trouble. And I feel like with all he's put into the program, he deserves to go out on a personal note a little better. And I hope this is the game for him. And, you know, if you think back 2 years ago, and I know the personnel is different, things of that sort, but he was really playing well against Gonzaga. Yeah. I guess that was 3 years ago. Yeah. No, that was 2 years ago. Yeah, and really playing well. And then he got a really tough, I think it was 4th foul call early in the second half.
Yep.
That was tough. So he's had success against these guys and should be raring to go and confident. And I don't know. I just think he's riled up and ready to leave it all on the court. And hopefully the refs, he's got to do a better job, as you said, of staying in front of guys and if he gets beat, not slap him on the elbow or whatever. But I just feel like he'll be riled up tonight, you know, and I just gathered that from talking to him.
Yeah, no question. And I think, you know, another key is limiting Gonzaga's transition points. Mm-hmm. They're one of the best teams in the history of college basketball at after made baskets, pushing the pace quick. Mm-hmm. They don't turn you over that much, but Jared specifically can be a little sloppy with the ball at times. And we just can't give them, you know, runaway layups and dunks. They're incredibly fast in transition. They get easy, you know, points in the paint. And if Baylor can limit those, I think, you know, to 10 or less, they average 27. So that's a big task. But if Baylor can really limit those, I think, you know, the Bears have a really good shot of winning this game.
They average 27 in transition, 27 points
a game. I think that's the number I heard. 27 points a game in transition, which is an astronomical number.
Yeah. And, you know, Baylor, let's just face it. I mean, we're sitting here gloating over Gonzaga, which we should. They're phenomenal. But Baylor's really good, too. They do a lot of great things. And you know, the thing they really do well that is shoot threes, you know, and at least in some games, most games. And let's face it, I think to win this game tonight, they're going to need to hit, you know, 12 to 14 threes. That would certainly help. They can't hit six. You know, I don't think going 6 to 26 is going to do it. But they got to get hot from the outside, and they got the guys to do it. And also, I mean, I think it's really been encouraging, you know, what we've seen from Baylor's bench. They had that little spell kind of toward the end of the Big 12 and then in the Big 12 tournament where they just weren't giving you anything. I think last game, John, you know, that was the first time he had reached double figures since December 29th. Obviously, yep. Matt is playing really well in Flagler. So, man, you know, we said early in the season, I remember we were here for that Illinois game, you know, in Indianapolis on December 1st or whatever it was, December 2nd. And I remember Flagler coming in and scoring about 19 or 17. And we just thought, man, the difference in this Baylor team, the thing that separates them is they're not five or six deep. They're a solid eight deep. And we're seeing that. That went away for a while, you know, and they were still mustering some wins and eking out some wins. But boy, when they got those eight guys going, they're tough.
Yeah, no. And you got to say Baylor has the advantage in the backcourt. As great as Gonzaga's backcourt is with Nimbard and Suggs and IE, Baylor having four and having Davion Mitchell, who I would argue is the best guard in this game. You know, Jalen Suggs may be the number one pick in the draft, but I think that combo of Mitchell and Butler and Teague, you know, is a better combo than the three that Gonzaga has. And then you bring Flagler off the bench. You know, so that's just an advantage for Baylor. But obviously the advantage for Gonzaga is Timmy and Kispert, you know, Kispert's ability at 6'7" to stretch the floor and really drive to the basket. I mean, those two are, you know, 19 point per game scorers. And that's rare to have such a great backcourt and then have two incredible offensive players like them, you know, but Baylor's bench is better and Baylor's got to really take advantage of their bench depth. And, you know, I think if this game is called closely, like if there's a lot of fouls called, in a way that favors Baylor, cause you can get some of those starters in foul trouble, you know, but it also makes it more likely that it's not a high scoring game. So, you know, probably the tighter, or I mean, it makes it more likely that it is a high scoring game is what I meant to say. If they let them play, it could surprise us and go the under, you know, like more like a Villanova Baylor vibe. But if they call it a little tighter, then it'll definitely get in the 80s, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that as good as Gonzaga is, it's been a while, if at all, this season since they've seen a defense like that they're going to see tonight, you know, and I don't know. I mean, they certainly didn't see it in their conference. I feel like for the most part in the tournament, you know, I mean, UCLA was really good the other night, but it's still, in terms of just the defensive intensity Baylor's going to bring, that's just something they haven't seen. Now, these are all high-level players. I'm not saying they can't adjust to it, but, you know, what I like about Baylor's mentality too right now is I think they wanted Gonzaga to win that game the other night. I think, you know, a lot of times fans, you're thinking, oh, let's hope Gonzaga gets knocked off and, you know, that'll make our path easier. And although UCLA was really darn good, but I think Baylor deep down is glad they're playing Gonzaga. I mean, they want to play the best. They want to win this title by beating the best. And that's what we've got. And, you know, it's what a great deal, man. I mean, like how many times does college basketball truly, does the season truly end with the two best teams? I mean, you know, that's what you always want, but it rarely happens in the tournament where the two best teams are actually there playing at the end. But that's what we've got this time, and I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I just was looking up the stats. I know you live and die by stats and efficiency numbers and so forth. I'm kidding. But, Kansas, had a really good defense this year, but at the beginning of the year, they did not. I mean, they got better as the year went along. Virginia did not have their typical great defense this year. They were not even in the top 35 in defensive efficiency. Whoa. So the only elite defensive team that Kansas has gone up against is USC.
Exactly. Yeah. Not.
And USC, I mean, I was just shocked at how just unprepared or, you know, just like unwilling to, you know, take on the fight, you know, they were in that game. I actually expected that to be a close game. And I would have expected UCLA to be more of the blowout, you know, going into those two contests. But, you know, I do think that, like you said, you know, going up against this defense and, you know, Baylor's efficiency ratings don't really tell the story of how great this defense is. The defense has been spectacular in the tournament. And if I'm trying to be unbiased, which of course I do, I have biases, but I think this is a toss up game. I mean, the line is 4.5, five and a half is 4.5, but that's taken into account, you know, Baylor's COVID pause. Baylor is certainly playing like they were in the beginning of February, Texas. And at that time, all the efficiency ratings were, you know, Baylor and Gonzaga were neck and neck. In fact, Baylor was actually ahead of Gonzaga in the efficiency ratings at that time. And if you look at just the tournament, Baylor's ahead of Gonzaga in the efficiency ratings, the advanced stats just for the tournament.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a toss-up game. I mean, I don't think, you know, the 4.5 line is indicative of how close this matchup is on paper.
Yeah, it's neat to see, too, because I think going into the tournament, all the commentators and the national people were like, it's Gonzaga to lose. You know, it's Gonzaga and everyone else. And I think through these last five games, Baylor has, you know, catapulted itself back up into that slot right alongside them in everyone's mind. And I think now people would agree with you. I mean, a lot of people are picking Baylor in this game, which they might not have picked Baylor, you know, 3 weeks ago. So.
Right.
You know, no matter what happens, this program and this team has earned the respect of everyone. And it's just so nice to some of the same people that used to rip on Baylor to me or text to me and saying, hey, your team is awesome and good luck. And, you know, I meet these Gonzaga fans and they're like, wow, Baylor's so good. You know what I mean? And there's just the respect. It's great to see, especially when you consider all the crap that, you know, we've heard for 18 years or whatever, and to finally see on a national level, it's finally flipped, and Scott Drew has this program the reputation is just tremendous. So it's awesome. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of mutual respect, and I think there's also a lot of Indiana Hoosier fans that are going to be in the arena tonight or the stadium, I guess I should say, that are going to be rooting for Baylor because they don't want to see that 1976 Indiana's
I didn't think of that. Yeah.
So I think they're rooting that Baylor pulls this off. Do you think the pressure of being undefeated is going to have any impact on the game whatsoever tonight, or is that more probably that game against UCLA and tonight?
I don't really think the undefeated. I think there's just pressure to win the title at this point and pressure to live up to that their billing, but I doubt it. I doubt it's more about winning the title now for them. You know, the undefeated thing probably, you know, hovered over them during the regular season and the conference tournament, but I don't know. I don't think so now. So,
well, two things to watch for, in my opinion. One is, you know, Andrew Nembhard. A lot of people talk about the matchup of Jalen Suggs and Davion Mitchell, and they'll probably be on each other quite a bit, but Andrew Nembhard is actually their top assist guy in the tournament. And is a lot more efficient. He doesn't turn it over as much. So, you know, I do expect him to be on the ball, maybe perhaps a little bit more than Suggs is. But like Baylor, it's a dual point guard situation. So Suggs and Nembhard for Gonzaga, Butler and Mitchell for Baylor will control the ball a lot. And then, you know, two of the most underrated players in the nation that don't get enough love is Joel Ayi. He averages 7 rebounds a game. Terrific defensive rebounder. And Maceo Teague. Maceo, and the thing about Maceo that Charlie Melton told us in an interview we did with him is just how elite his endurance is, and how he is still playing at a peak level at the end of a game, whereas, you know, other guys maybe at 85% or 90% because of fatigue. But we've seen that in the last few games. We saw that in the Arkansas game where he hit some big threes. We saw that in the Houston game, even though the spread, you know, was certainly huge. I mean, he had 11 second half points. What are there any players that you kind of expect maybe to have a breakout game, or what are you watching for tonight that might be a surprise to the average fan?
I think Matthew Meyer is a guy that is going to come out just eager to, you know, not prove himself, but eager to play well and maybe expose, like you said, some matchup problems. And, you know, maybe he's thinking he can play himself into the draft. I don't know, but I, you know, in games or moments like this, but I think he'll be a factor. And I think it, just like we've said all along, I think Butler is a huge key. You know, I mean, when he's playing at All-American level, man, this is a tough team to beat. And he was the other night for the first half, you know, but then he took one shot in the second half. It was just kind of weird. You score. So it doesn't matter. I mean, you're up by 25 points, but hopefully he can, you know, hopefully he can dial it up the whole game. And it's the national championship game, of course, he's going to. So, but he needs to be playing at a high level. And to me, I mean, if he misses the first shot or two, I don't care. I mean, I hope he shoots through whatever slump he's in, you know what I mean, in the game. Right. I mean, like, don't, just because you miss a shot or two, I don't want to see him all of a sudden become tentative. I mean, he's gotten this team here, and now he needs to play with aggression and play like an All-American, and I think he will. So those are two guys I think that if they are playing at a high level, both of them especially, they're going to have a good chance to win the game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Two stats about Matthew Meyer that may surprise you. I put in this how they match up preview. One is he is the best defensive rebounder on the court tonight by percentage per minute. So he's an outstanding defensive rebounder. And the second is he's number one in steal percentage per minute on the court tonight. So he, you know, even though he hasn't played big minutes, sometimes only 15 minutes a game, 20 minutes a game, he brings the productivity. You know, he definitely does some things that other than scoring, you know, he does rebound defensively really well. He has a great steal percentage. He's had a terrific tournament and just a great season in general. But so any other parting comments before we call it a wrap?
No, I think I'm going to try to go to the gym.
I'll meet you there. You got to get a workout in before the game.
No, I got to do something, to get my energy back. But I tell you what, man, I'm excited about tonight. You know, think about all the games and moments we've been to covering Baylor and as a media member or a fan or whatever, and this is as big as it's ever been. You know, I'm you know, proud of my alma mater, and you know, it's exciting.
Great PR for the school. Great accomplishment for Scott Drew, this whole staff, the culture that they've built. The future is very bright for Baylor basketball. Absolutely. And obviously, it would be even brighter if they're the first team since 1966 from the state of Texas. I think Texas Western won it in 66.
Texas Western was in 66, I'm not sure the year, but it's something.
I'm not sure if the year's right, but I know Texas Tech had that opportunity to do it, and they blew a lead late, and Virginia beat them. But Baylor is able to cross the finish line here. It would be historic for Texas basketball as well. So I know all of our rival fan bases are rooting for the Bears with just like we would be rooting for them. Well, you've been listening to the Sikkim 365 podcast with Ashley Hodge and Jason King, Sikkim Bears.